Hello, hello, and welcome back or welcome to the Life Without Limits podcast. I'm your host, Yogi Roth, and it's season three. And I'm so pumped about season three because we've curated some really unique conversations around people who are seeking their best self. They're seeking their truest path, which is really the goal, right, in life. And on this podcast, in season one and season two, and now in season three, we'll continue to explore the simple question of what does it mean to be human? And we'll talk to people that are figuring it out along the way, and hopefully some of their stories, some of their background, some of these conversations can help you a little bit. This one is insane. I mean, it's epic. His name is Jared Blank, and Jared is on the verge in late January of 2018 of running seven marathons on seven continents in 7 days. That is not a joke. That's a real thing. It's called the World Marathon Challenge. Last year, 33 people accomplished this. The two previous years, it was less than 20 both years. So not a lot of people are doing this. So you have to clearly be driven and love running and, you know, have the most malleable joints and ligaments and tendons and bones and all that stuff. I can't even imagine doing it. But Jared is about to do it. Now, that is impressive. Of course, that is a conversation we would want and imagine on this podcast. But what Jared will inspire you with is what he's overcame and his vulnerability with that. So let me break it down for you. In fifth grade, Jared is told that he would never graduate high school. Well, he did graduate high school. He went to USC and graduated from there, and then got a master's at SC, and then got an MBA as well from Seattle University. Now, what's so impressive about Jared is that he dealt with what a lot of people deal with, which is titled dyslexia, this type of learning challenge, and he did not share it with a lot of people. Now, Jared and I met at USC 13 years ago. We were both really young assistants on Pete Carroll's staff, and we were both going to grad school and both sleeping in the office a couple days a week. And we just developed this friendship. And I knew Jared really well and had no idea that he was dealing with this. And Jared was working in recruiting, one of the most detailed, anal jobs. We're talking about Excel documents, write-ups, all the things that if you have dyslexia, well, it's 10 times as hard as it could be for someone without it. And it was already a challenging job. Well, Jared didn't flinch and just worked and grinded his way through it. Now, his path, it wouldn't surprise you, he just took off. He then became the head of recruiting at SC. Then he became the director of football operations at the University of Washington. Came back to SC to be the director of football operations as well as led player development. And then last year, he said, you know what? I'm not chasing my dream. Now, this is after he won 2 national titles, 5 Pac-10 or Pac-12 titles, oversaw over 100 athletes going to the NFL, and pretty much in college football, he had what is coined as a dream job for people in operations and administration. He said, nah, I'm done. And he quit. And now he's chasing his dream, which is to run the World Marathon Challenge, but most importantly, raise awareness for the International Dyslexia Foundation. Make sure that he can inspire a young man just like him, or young women that were like him and told, you know, you can't do this, you can't do that. You're going to absolutely love this conversation with Jared. He's dynamic. He's so fun to talk to. He's going to inspire you in a bunch of ways. I urge you to go visit www.inmotional.run. Search Jared Blank. Find him on all social media platforms. I think this guy's going to change the world. He's going to be a household name in the next couple of years as he talks all over the globe about the power of education, the power of teacher, of course, the power of play, the power of sport. Jared is special. He has a quote that I'll leave you with before you hear it in our conversation where he says, quote, running has always been my connection to the world. I have a story and I feel a responsibility to be open about it. Well, thankfully he was in our candid and really fun conversation. Jared Blank, a good friend, a great man. Utilize the hashtag #RunWithJared and support Jared as he's on the verge of doing something I highly doubt any of us could even imagine. Enjoy the convo, and Jared, good luck in the race, brother. All right, here we are, Life Without Limits podcast. I'm your host, Yogi Roth, and as previously described in the intro, joined by Jared Blank.
Hey.
Good friend, buddy. You're about to embark on a challenge that I've never even heard about prior to meeting you, the World Marathon Challenge. 7 marathons, 7 days, 7 continents. We're going to get into a bunch of things, but I really want to start off there. Like, when did you first hear about this?
So I actually heard about it in 2015. I was actually sitting on the couch. We were watching ESPN. I was watching the ESPN highlights, and my family was in the room. And I saw this highlight of this guy that had run 7 marathons in 7 days on 7 continents, and I thought that was the coolest thing ever.
That's amazing. All right, so if we start way, way back, you grew up in the Portland community, and you were told at some point in your life that you had a learning disability. Did you ever know that you had trouble learning? Like, how does that process even work for you prior to you even being told that by an official person, as an AKA an adult?
Well, I think if you look at how I was told when I was 5, like it was revealed to me that I had a learning challenge when I was 5 years old. And I think at that point, once I was told, the things that I was doing started to make sense. Mm. So like on some level, my backwards R's or upside down R's, or calling the neighbors, you know, by a different name than they actually were, or you reference the doorbell and it's Beldor. Those types of things were starting to click as to there might be some learning issues there.
Okay, so take me through you growing up, because you have a big loving family. You've been around sports your entire life. What was it like for you as an adolescent in this community around sport, trying to figure out kind of what's happening in your own life?
Well, I think it was, I mean, look, I look at my life and I was really fortunate. You know, I had an amazing family, supportive community. And at the same time, I had this challenge, right, of learning and being able to process information and going through tutoring and doing all those things. That part was a lot of work. And sport was kind of a way for me to process all that, process that frustration in the classroom.
All right, so what were you interested in sport-wise?
Everything. Like, everything sport was interesting to me. I loved playing basketball, soccer, being active, being in motion. That was really my, you know, my passion.
Do you think back and wonder why? I mean, you're around the Portland Trailblazers growing up. You end up deciding to go to USC. But what about sport do you think drew you in? Because I ask that because, you know, you had challenges growing up, as you suitably referenced a little bit earlier. You fell in love with sport. Was it an oasis for you? Because I think a lot of competitors, it becomes this place that's like an even playing field, no matter how you walk, how you talk, what you believe in, where your family's from, how much money you have. It becomes this, you know, level playing field. And I'm wondering for you if that was the same thing.
Yeah, I think that is actually very eloquently said. And I think that resonates really well with me and how I was, I guess, how I would see the world. You know, like you go to, you know, I had some physical challenges that I dealt with in terms of like holding a pencil or, you know, being able to sit in a chair and balance, but they put a ball in my hand and I could throw it against the target and no problem. I could get to, once I got to the soccer field, like everything else was really non-existent in terms of learning challenge or the physical elements were gone. They were dismissed and it was just playing.
All right, so what drove you when you were in high school? Because to make sure I get this story right, you're told that you might never graduate and you end up becoming what, number 2 in your class and class president. What are, I guess, some of those late nights like? Because we all had them when we think back to high school, right? When you're told you're going to be this, you're going to be that, and you're faced with yourself, whether it's on the basketball floor and you're shooting jump shots or you're staring up at the ceiling laying in bed. I'm curious for you, what was a driving force for you to clearly graduate also towards the top of your class and also the class president?
Well, you're around football, right? And you can see, you know, you're looking at plays after play after play, and you're looking at situations that might be really complex. And for me, that was the classroom every day. My head was spinning every single day. You know, I didn't even feel like I belonged in the classroom. And so there was a level of competition to show that I you know, prove that I belong there. And I think that was kind of the driving force. So that would be late night studying or extra time with the tutor in order to be prepared for that day in school. And it would just be one day. And then as I started to see success with that process, then it became a real driving force towards wanting to be competitive in that arena.
How did you deal with frustration as a teenager?
I mean, running was definitely something that helped me. You know, it was easy to go out the door and put on shoes and go for a run. And that was definitely the main way that I was able to deal with kind of those frustrations.
And would your mindset be, because you said competition, right? And you go running and you have this time where you're alone, right? You're going through what we call the lonely work, right? At that stage of your life, was it about proving other people wrong?
Yeah, I think in the classroom it was totally about that.
Yeah,
I think it was totally about proving that I could do it. And, you know, I doubt myself, and I knew there was kind of those expectations of, hey, he might not get higher than a C, he might not graduate high school. And my family's response to that was always, well, let's just see. And so I always had their support, but there was always an element like I needed to prove it.
So where were you the day, and what is the setting like when you're told you may not graduate high school?
So it was a conversation, I think, that you have these IEP meetings that people, you know, like you'll have like learning professionals in those environments. And that's where the information can get revealed as to, you know, what assistance a student might need and stuff like that. So it was probably one of those conversations that I just picked that up or happened to be in the room for. And then it just kind of stuck with me because it, you know, it's a high expectation.
Like when I heard that story, and we've known each other for a really long time, when you told me that, I was pissed. Who has the right to tell a teenager that, okay, your academic life is going to probably end here at 18?
Well,
were you?
Well, I think, I mean, you go back to when I was in, I mean, this is elementary school that they do these hypotheses, they do these synopses. So they're trying to give you, I think, a realistic outlook on your situation. And, you know, you can have many conversations with professionals, and that was one, you know, that's just one side of the coin. It's kind of like there's a bunch of doctors in the room and you're going to always go get a second opinion, I guess, if you're not getting the information you want. But yeah, it was a challenging situation. It was challenging to live with that expectation because you were always like, I didn't want that to be the case. But at the same time, you always kind of made things harder for yourself because you carried that backpack on.
Okay, so you bring your backpack to USC. You follow your brothers. You follow a family that's obviously Trojan fans. To go from the place where, okay, you're never going to graduate high school to crushing it in high school, to then to an environment that, you know, nobody really knows you or your background. And, you know, you're probably the most motivated person I've ever met in my entire existence, including Hall of Fame athletes. When you got to SC, what's that like for you?
Well, let me take you back for a second. When I was in freshman year, you know, I did pretty well grade-wise, and that's when they started talking to me about schools. But I never even considered college before. So the only colleges that I could list when they were asking me what I'd think of were the colleges that I saw in the basketball tournament. You know, like I'm talking about UNC in Michigan, and no real research, just kind of it hadn't really been a vision in my thought. And then going to SC was kind of twofold. It was, I really wanted to pursue a career in sports business. And then the other part of it was, yeah, I saw my older two brothers go, and I said, if they can do it, so can I.
Still, always driven, right? Now, you get there, and what I'm amazed by is that you go to campus at SC, and that is not an easy academic environment, first and foremost, to go in. It is not an easy social environment.
to move to at 18 years old to the, you know, second largest, you know, media market in the country when there's a ton of societal pressures on you. And you decide that, you know, I'm going to learn from the athletic department. I'm going to go down this road of athletic training. I mean, it's like I don't know if this is accurate, Jared, but I felt like you had this list of things you wanted to get done when you got to college, and you started knocking them off when you showed up in SoCal.
Yeah, I mean, that. Yeah, if you look at it in hindsight, there was definitely a list. In going down there, I knew my head was going to be spinning. I knew I was going into an environment that was, or at least felt like it was out of my reach, you know, out of my comfort zone completely. And so to figure out how to operate within that environment was a challenge, but it was one that I knew I was going into. But yeah, I really wanted to figure out how to, you know, work in the sports world.
All right. So you crush in the academic community as an undergrad, and then we meet when you go to grad school. We're both 22-year-old dudes right out of undergrad. We meet in Heritage Hall. You're working for Mark Jackson, who ends up now, he's the athletic director of Villanova, a mentor, both of ours. We're both working for Pete Carroll on probably one of the most iconic college football dynasties in the history of the game when you kind of look back with that. For you, you know, because you were running recruiting, you had a lot of responsibilities, and nobody really knew your path. And nobody knew how hard it was. And recruiting is like the most anal, organized thing in the history of the world. And it sounds like that's an area that was a challenge for you. You never told anybody what was going on. It took me 2 or 3 years to even learn your actual story.
Yeah, I mean, it was never something I really talked about because I didn't want it to be something where people thought, oh, he can't do this, or, you know, we might need to get another guy or whatever it might be, or it might not be the right person for the role, because I always believe that if you put in the work, then anything's possible.
Well, you put in the work, all right. I mean, I'm going to embarrass you, but, you know, you and I, there's times where we would sleep in the office. I can remember coming into the office once, twice, multiple times, where you would literally be asleep at your desk. Because you had slept overnight and you were building these recruiting tapes and just grinding way beyond what the standard coach or football staff member would say is defined as grinding. Did you even know how hard you're working? What was the mindset there?
Well, I don't know that I would. I mean, I looked at the environment and I always thought, you know, you see these young up-and-coming coaches and you were in that situation and you see how hard coaches are working, and you see how hard Coach Carroll was working, and I think you're always just inspired by that environment to want to, you know, work to that level. But I always looked at every task like, if there's something that needs to get done, then you stay until it gets done.
You became that guy. You became the person that literally, if anybody needed anything, it was you, whether it was academics and the highest level to the lowest level of tasks. Everybody just trusted you. Jared will always get it done. Did you know how valuable you were? Because now we're talking like 25 years old, and you don't see it. I mean, you talked about these coaches that were on their way. We would look at you and be like, Jared's on his way. Look out. This guy's going to run the world here in a minute. I'm curious, when all that stuff was happening for you, if there was a side of you that saw the light at the end of that tunnel of where you potentially were going and how valuable you were at the time.
I don't think so. I mean, I think I probably just looked at it from a day-to-day task of, hey, this is what needs to get done, and this is where we're going as an organization, and I was into that mode, you know, not really, you know, I mean, I had aspirations to, you know, want to move up in a sports career for sure. So there's that element of things and just kind of seeing where it might lead, but I think at the time I was more focused on the task at hand.
When it got, you know, busy, hectic, recruiting, whatever, was running always your release?
Yeah. I mean, running's always been, was always that, really. Like, that was my time to, you know, because you can get hit that wall, right, where you're trying to grind through a task or whatever, and you get out the door and you go for this run, and then I come back, and what was maybe taking me an hour and a half, and now it's taking me 45 minutes. and I'm getting into that mode of a rhythm. And that's what running did for me.
Wow. Okay, so speaking of running, Steve Sarkisian gets the job. He was in the running at UW, gets named the head coach. His first hire is you to run up there with him. And now you go from the assistant director of football operations, which, by the way, for all of you that don't know, that is a huge job at any institution, let alone the University of Southern California, when we're running, what is it, 7 straight top 4 finishes, multiple Rose Bowls, 7 straight Pac, 10 or 12 titles. For you, when you get that job, now you're running shit. Now you're like the dude, all logistics, all organization, up at Washington. What's it like to go from SC to UW? And I know you went up there with another coworker, Dennis Slutak. You guys kind of tag-teamed that thing early on. But to get that raise, you know, and to get taken from one institution to another huge Power 5 school for you, what was that vibe like when you thought back on everything you've been through?
I mean, it was exciting. Like, I would say it was really exciting. It was like you're working your tail off in school. You're working your tail off in the work environment. And then now you're starting to see it pay off. And you're starting to be trusted with more responsibility. And you're starting to see a bigger role for yourself. And, you know, my attitude in the work environment is always wanting to contribute to the best of my ability. And just to see that now be in a place that you can go and contribute with a new head coach and be part of something and build something, that was an exciting.
So I'm curious, because you get that job and you had always prided yourself on, I'm going to outwork you. I'm going to work harder. Did you try to work even harder when you got a raise and all of a sudden now you're in a new environment? Or was it, no, I'm going to work smarter? Because not only did you, in the time at SC, get an undergrad, you also got a master's degree in communication management and then took your way up to Seattle.
Yeah, I mean, I think as you are in the workforce, or as I was in the workforce, I was, you know, you're grinding. There was grinding years, and then there was years where I recognized that not only do I need to work hard, but I need to work more efficiently and look at a holistic view of an organization. And that was kind of my mindset when I went up to Washington, is it can't just be about running to get things done. It has to be running to get things. It has to be getting things done, but getting it done in a way that supports the entire organization.
You know, so many amazing people you were around at the University of Washington from a leadership standpoint. I'm curious, as you also gained an MBA up in Seattle in your time up there, I had your previous degrees. Did you, or would you kind of write down little tenets that you would learn from Scott Woolworth, athletic director then, Jen Cohen, current athletic director there now, Carter Henderson, who is the head of communications there? You've been around some really unique leaders. We talked about Mark Jackson and Pete Carroll and Steve Sarkisian, but when you be around a lot of talented people, were you filing away elements for you when you were going to, okay, when I run my own thing, I'm going to do this and maybe a little of this and some of that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, you have to look at the people that I've been fortunate to be around always had nuggets of wisdom. There was always something to take away from every conversation, even, you know, especially when things weren't going, maybe not going the way that you would ideally like them to. That's when I was learning the most.
Give me an example.
So you're in operations and you make decisions you're in the field. You have to make fast decisions. And I remember making a decision and, it affected another AD's area, another assistant AD's area. And I remember talking to, I think the associate AD at the time was Odie Vincent. And he was like, yeah, that kind of touches this area over here. And at that moment I was like, you really need to have your eyes on the whole court and you need to see how every decision has that ripple effect, because you want everyone's pulling the same way and you don't want to step on someone's toes, or you don't want to be in a situation where you're putting someone else in a situation that's not going to make them successful. You're always trying to make everyone that you're working with successful. And so when I got that information back to me, that feedback, I remember just wanting a flow chart of, hey, what is, if I make a decision on, if we make a decision to change the meal time, who is that affecting? And how do we communicate that?
Interesting. So the next decision made is to come back to Southern California. Steve Sarkisian gets offered and accepts the head coaching job at SC. You come back. Now you're the director of football operations. You came in as a student who not a lot of people give an opportunity, or maybe not a lot of people thought you might graduate. You graduate, get an MBA. You get a master's at SC. You're coming back now. You are the guy with the keys to the office in one of the more dominant programs in the history of college football. Did you ever take a minute and be like, whoa, like that kid in elementary school that was told he wasn't ever going to graduate or find his way to college is now kind of running the biggest program in the history of college football?
You know, it's interesting because you get around these mentors, you get around Pete Carroll, you get around these coaches, and they kind of challenge you not to look down the mountain and just kind of like focus on what you got in front of you. And I kind of had that mindset when when we first got down there, it was kind of like hit the ground running and figure stuff out. I don't think I really took that pause at that moment. I think I was just, again, you're kind of just in that mode of being around an organization and knowing that you got to get things done for all the people that are involved. And I don't know if I really ever took that moment.
Yeah, it's interesting because I always knew you as a runner, right? Whether it was you running on the Strand when you came back and took the job as the DFO, whether you were getting workouts on the treadmill. But I don't think I ever understood how serious you took the craft or even how serious the relief was for you. When you're at SC, it's not the easiest of times. Come out of the first season, you guys are doing fine. You have a nice job. Okay, here we go. We see the future. But then, you know, it gets rough waters. You know, Steve Sarkisian goes through elements in his personal life that he struggles with, ends up leaving the program, getting dismissed as the head coach. For you as a guy to go through that, was running your release?
Well, I mean, you go back and I look at running as always being that thing, you know, whether times were good or times were troubled water, like running was that outlet. And so it's been there for me, you know. I mean, the hardest times in my life one of the hardest times was when I couldn't run anymore. Like I got hurt and you're out from running. And so I think running has always been my connection to the world and how to see problems, see issues.
When did you know you fell in love with it? Because there's a time when you're at SC that, at least for me watching you and being one of your closest friends, I observe like, okay, this is a shift. This is no longer a release, but this is joy. And I think there's a difference there between a release and joy. And I'm curious if there was a moment that you recognized that and when this whole running thing became way more than what millions of people do all over the world just to get a nice sweat on, what became this crazy passion of yours.
So I ran a marathon in 2010. I ran the Eugene Marathon. And I think at the finish of that marathon, I realized this was something more than just dealing with frustration. I think this was something that I was in love with. Like this was, I think I had this relationship with running. It helped me deal with frustration. I think that relationship grew to being something that I liked to do. And then when I finished that marathon, it was something more.
So how do you get the guts? Because I think what's amazing for outsiders, right? People that just go to footballscoop.com or just read the wire and the transactions, all of a sudden they see Jared Blank, director of football operations, head of player personnel, University of Southern California, decides to leave his post, which is like a dream job for anyone in sport business, sport management, an MBA program, anybody who just likes sports in general. Let me live in LA. Let me be around one of the top programs in the history of all sports and be around players and help them, right? And you did an amazing job, right? I mean, you had me in. I moderated conversations with Alexis Jones, Gary Vaynerchuk. I mean, and on and on and on. You did so many things to impact these student-athletes. And then one day, you weren't there anymore. How did you come to that decision?
Well, it is a dream job, right? It was a dream job of mine. And the decision to leave that post was this other passion of mine. And, you know, I go back to seeing the race in 2015 and I looked at, you know, if I were to do an endeavor like that, the energy and focus that I'd want to put in to that project, it never felt like it would be right to be at a job where I feel that would need my full attention. Or if I had this endeavor and not be fair to that at the same time. And I looked at where I was from an age standpoint. I looked at where I was from a health standpoint. And it was like the right time to go take that charge. So it was just a stronger pull.
And that pull you're referencing is the World Marathon Challenge.
Yes, seven marathons in 7 days on seven continents.
Okay, so you talked at the top of the interview. You saw it on ESPN. You're sitting with your family like, oh, that could be kind of cool someday. And then you decide to leave one of the greatest jobs in the history of sport to go after this. I mean, what is the reaction of your loved ones when you're like, yep, guys, I'm out. Sorry about you. Don't get any more tickets anymore. See you around.
Well, I think they're heartbroken about the tickets. But I think they know me too. And they know when I decide to go after something that I'm going after it. And whether it be a bigger school when that's an insane mountain to go climb, if you're looking at it probably from their perspective, or you're looking at seven races in 7 days from their perspective, it's you know, you're it's another mountain. But when that decision... when I make a decision like that, then I'm going for it. I guess to really touch on it, I mean, I did this walkathon when I was working at UW. It was for my friend, and she had just lost her dad, and we were all supporting her. And I told my buddy, I said, I think I'm going to walk the whole thing. You know, it was a team deal, and I stayed on the track the whole night.
Like, how long is that?
It was like from 4 p.m. until like 7:30 a.m.
Whoa, that's a lot of podcasts.
Yeah. I bounced a tennis ball. But I committed to going around the track. And I think when I just have that mentality, then I got to go. And I know it.
That's your one percenter. I mean, that's different than a commitment, right? That is a lifestyle choice that you make. And I'm just so curious, and I'm sure everyone, right? I mean, everybody has the same reaction, I'm sure, when they're like, what are you up to? Oh, I left USC to run seven marathons in 7 days. Oh, by the way, on seven continents. They're like, how, why, when? Do you know how far that is? What's your ankles and knees like? I just wonder how the process has been for you, because I look at you now, and you look like you've slept. You look really happy. You look healthier than you've ever been. And I think, Jared, for the first time in your life, you're doing something for you. I'm curious if that's like, A, accurate, and B, do you recognize that?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think, look, you make a decision to go do a race. You're making a decision for yourself. Now, if it was just a race, I don't think that would be enough for me. Like, I always feel like it needs to be bigger than you have to be running for something bigger than just yourself. But a part of it is that, and a part of that is recognizing, you know, that you need to get, hey, if you're going to do this, you need to feel right. You need to sleep right. Like, you need to look at what's going to put you in the best frame of mind. So those are definitely things that I'm looking at as I go through this challenge. And that's why I wanted the time to be able to focus on it, because I knew there were some things from a fitness standpoint that I had to get right if I was going to go try to do this. And part of that was sleep and nutrition.
Where does this race even start, and where are you going? How does this work?
So it starts in late January.
Okay.
And we go to South Africa to meet as a group. And I just found out there'll probably be about 60 runners.
Wow.
And from there, we go to Nova Antarctica. I didn't know Nova Antarctica existed.
So is that marathon number one?
That's marathon number one.
Okay, so you fly to South Africa. You meet about 60 other people from all over the globe. You carb up, I don't know.
Yeah, right.
And then you kick off 7 straight days in Antarctica.
Right.
Like, all right, explain it to us. Are you on a private plane? Like, what happens?
So you get on a charter plane. It looks like they're going to have probably 2 planes, one that picks you up and takes you to Antarctica, and you take that same one back to South Africa where you'll run the second race. And then I think there's another plane you get on or something like that, and then you head to Perth, Australia.
Okay, so, all right, we're going to get to stop number 4. All right, but you go to Antarctica. Are you going to sleep over after you run it? Do you can run it, leave the plane, run it, get back on the plane?
So my understanding of the competition is that you run it, get on the plane the same day.
Wow. Okay, all right. So stop one is Antarctica. Then you go run a marathon in South Africa, Perth, Australia. Where's 4?
Dubai.
Amazing, because it's going to not be that hot, hopefully.
Right.
Okay. 5?
5, we're going to Portugal.
Amazing. And 6?
Colombia.
Wow, Narcos. And you finish it off where?
We're finishing in Miami, Florida.
I mean, this is amazing.
It's the first time it finishes in the States, which...
And how long has this been going on?
Since 2015.
So the first one they ever had was the one that you watched.
Yeah, I saw the highlights on ESPN.
Oh, my God. Okay, so take us through, like, how do you prepare your body? I mean, I just do imagine listeners similar to me are like, how do you get your body right to even run something like this?
Well, I mean, like any fitness endeavor, right? Like,
this is not any fitness endeavor, bro.
Well, you look at the ultra marathon community, and I've had the fortune to be around some of those people, and you look at how they train, and for them, this is just one, you know, it's just another challenge. But I think it's anything. You're getting you gotta look at all the facets of what goes into the body. So from a sleep, from a nutrition, from workouts, strength and conditioning. I mean, I think the part that I've been adding on is a lot of yoga. Just because I recognize like flexibility is going to be key, and having, you know, being on the plane for 50 hours in a week, like what that looks like for the body. So those are some of the elements that I'm definitely looking at.
Oh, I love it. 'Cause your training's amazing. I mean, you've done like an ultra marathon. You're going to fly in and out to Las Vegas, run a marathon same day, fly out, right? I mean, you're kind of getting it right.
Yeah. I'm trying to do all the things that I'm going to experience. So doing the Portland Marathon this past month, and being able to run that race and then be able to train the next week. So that's kind of the challenge.
It's safe to say. I'm curious, Jared. So who are you running for?
So I've connected with the International Dyslexia Association. So I'm doing some work for them in trying to raise awareness and funds and along that, you know, doing speaking engagements on you know, behalf of them, and it's been awesome to work with those people because they really care about it, and they really care about the students that are going through school now. And I think, you know, I'm someone who always looked at myself as being really fortunate. I had support, and I also knew how hard it was. And I always thought, like, what happens to a student who doesn't have that support? And so to be connected to an organization that really is dedicated to providing resources to schools and parents and students, of course, I feel really fortunate.
Okay, you can't give me a coach answer here, okay? You can't give me a media answer. You spent over the last 10 years being on sidelines every Saturday. National championships, Rose Bowls, big games at the Coliseum, all over the Pac-12 footprint and beyond. You're not, for the first time, on a sideline every Saturday. You're running trails on Saturday. You're going to yoga class on Saturday. You're getting sleep on a Saturday. Where do you think that you've changed the most over the last few months? And not just physically, in terms of your body getting right and getting healthy, but just your outlook on life.
Such a deep question. I mean, I think there's like so many different avenues to answer something like that. But where I would start with it is that I don't know that I've changed all that much in terms of how I've been. I've just been so concentrated on a specific endeavor and really been able to be laser focused on it, which has been a little bit of a game changer for me because, you know, when you're in operations or you're in recruiting, there's just so much, like you're pulled in so many different directions. So to be really laser focused on a project, that has been something that I've wanted to experience and I feel like I'm experiencing now.
So what are you seeking through the World Marathon Challenge?
Well, you know, seeking to run around the world is one thing, but the larger part of me is doing this because I recognize that I have a story, and I lived it, that I feel a responsibility to be now open and help, be it teachers or parents or students that are dealing with dyslexia or other learning challenges, or even any obstacles, you know, as you come across any student. And I feel responsibility to open up about that and be as open as I possibly can so that they recognize that, you know, that there's a person out there that's experienced similar things, that's gone through it, and there is a light at the end of the tunnel on it.
You know, for so many years, your job was to protect the program, to organize the program, to basically do everything in the back end. You know, you were kind of like, you know, the person that made sure everything went smoothly behind the scenes. You've got an Instagram account. You've got a YouTube page. You're doing speaking engagements all over the globe. People are paying you to come out now. What has it been like utilizing your voice? Did you know you always had that in you?
You know, that's a good question. I don't know if I always looked at having it in me, or I just recognized that at some point that information needed to become available. It needed to become a source. It needed to become a resource, really. And so, yeah, I was talking about it with somebody the other day, and I said, you know, yeah, I used to never have an Instagram. I was not on social media. I was very closed off. And because I recognized maybe there's information that I have, you know, 1 in 5 people deal with dyslexia. And I just really just felt the responsibility, like, let's take this story and let's just make it available.
Do you feel as though, do you recognize how much you inspire people? And I say that because a lot of people, and I'm not typecasting at all, but we have these dreams that we think about at night, right? Or we write down in our journal. And as we get older, we don't share them. You know, as a kid, it's, what do you want to do when you get older? I want to play for the Trailblazers, right? You said that.
Oh, totally.
For me, it was the 76ers, right? But as we get older, it's, yeah, maybe it'd be fun to, like, go to a game or help the organization. And maybe you don't want to say, I'm going to go play again, or whatever that version of play may be. I'm going to go run my own company again. And you become the guy in the background, which you were for so long. I'm curious if you realize how many people you've inspired, and if you were that guy, was your dream, was it buried, or did you have to go find it and seek it out?
Well, you know, look, I grew up in the town with the Portland Trailblazers. I knew that I wanted to work in sports on some level. So that was, I don't know if it found me or I found it, but I was, you know, fortunate to have a dream and then want to pursue it. And then I think with this running thing, it's like, it's always been this like relationship. It's, I guess it'd be like you know, like you're hanging out with a friend and the friendship grows and then all of a sudden you're like, hey, let's get married. And I think running is a little bit like that, you know, it like grew into that thing. And then when you see on TV, like the level it can be, then I think that's when that dream became either a second dream or one that had a stronger pull for me at this current moment.
The most powerful thing you've heard from people when you share your story with them now that you're chasing this dream that you just described?
You know, I don't know if there's one powerful thing. I think something's that I appreciate is you get a message where someone's like, hey, I saw your account. I'm starting to eat healthier and exercise. Or you share something personal that you were dealing with as a learning challenge and someone's like, you know, I'm really dealing with that and that's a hard thing. And you just talk about it and you have a conversation regarding that. I think those are the cool things. It's that connection on any level. I mean, my thing is people don't have to go run a 100-mile race or a marathon or whatever. Like, that's not what I'm pitching, but I do believe in like health and like taking care of yourself and finding that thing in exercise, whatever it is you like to do, to go do it.
This podcast is all about finding and trying to chase down the answer to the question of what does it mean to be human. I'm curious for you at this stage, you know, you're a couple months out now of legitimately running this race. What do you think it means to be human, Jared?
I think it's finding out what's possible, what moves you, and pursuing it. I think that makes you human. And I think relationships make you human. And I think recognizing other people's needs is human, makes you human.
And I feel like your whole life, maybe not your whole life, but there's elements of your life where people have tried to put limitations on you. And you clearly have blown through those doors time and time and time again. How do you feel about, and what's your relationship like with the word limits?
Well, I love what you're doing with Life Without Limits, because I think it resonates so clearly to me. And I think you have to, I mean, you know, I look at, if you're dreaming about it, if you're envisioning something, then right at that moment, I believe it's possible. And once it's possible, then all that's needed is the map to go figure out how to achieve it.
God, you really, you're such an inspiration, man. How can people get involved with your race? Because you're doing something that I think is, I really think the conversation right now is I'm having with somebody's gonna be a household name in 2 years. I really believe that.
Well, I mean, thank you for that. I mean, I'm humbled by that statement for sure, on many levels. But if people would like to get involved, I mean, there's really three ways to support. They can just follow along the story. I mean, that's really the main thing, is if the story has value for you, just follow along. And that's at InMotional, InMotional. That's on my website, emotional.run. And then they can give to the International Dyslexia Association, and there's a link that connects them to that on my site. And then if they want to just support me for the race, they have the opportunity to do that as well. But my main thing for people is if it resonates, follow along. Definitely donate to the IDA. I believe they're doing some amazing things and they're continuing to grow until everyone can read. And that's really the ways they can support me.
All right. So before we let you leave, my last question, Jared, is around the name of your Instagram handle, elements of your website, elements of your brand, which is InMotional.
Yeah.
And I get, you know, we're always in motion, right? What I'm really interested in is the emotional side of it. You're a guy, at least for me, that I think in sports, whatever, we're taught it's okay to cry after the Blazers get to the NBA Finals or SC wins a championship or if you lose one as a kid. But we can't be emotional anywhere else. And I don't know why that is. I just think that that exists in sports. I'm curious where the name came from and what your take on it is.
Well, it came from really two words. It came from motion and emotion. And how I connected with my emotions was really being in motion. And that's really where it stems from. And I think it's important to be in touch with your emotions at all times. I think it helps in our decision-making process. It helps in our relationships. And whatever allows you to do that, you know, with some people it's watching a movie and shedding tears and that's great. For me, it's always been if I'm actually physically in motion, then I can process. And that's where it came from. And then my thing to people is find what moves you and allow yourself to go to that place. So that's really where it's resonated.
I love it. I'm moved by this. I mean, it's about midnight. We're in your place in Portland having this conversation. And the only rule on this podcast is ask questions I don't know the answer to. And we know each other really well. But to hear you talk about how running moves you and how you found that thing that taps into you and the deepest level in the darkest times and the brightest times and what will be an amazing time in 7 continents, 7 days, 7 marathons, which is just gnarly, beautifully amazing and insane all the same. Jared, I think you're walking/running proverb, man. I mean, you're magic, bro.
Oh, I appreciate it. I got to tell you something too. You know, I was able to see your movie Life in a Walk, and for about 4 years, my dad and I had a conversation about going to Wrigley Field together, and we in 2015 we finally pulled the trigger and we went and we saw the Cubs play. And then we went the next day and saw the White Sox play and we flew back. But it was, you know, that journey with family. And again, you know, Life in a Walk, if anyone hasn't seen it, I totally recommend seeing it because it's about connection and it's about relationship and building that understanding. And yeah, it inspired me to do that, man.
Well, watching a movie and editing it, it's not an easy task, but not even close to what you're doing, bro. Hats off to you. I cannot wait to follow it. All the places to find Jared will be in the show notes. Jared, I'm going to push this thing as much as I can. I think it is one of the, if not the coolest things I've been around in my entire life. Easily the most powerful thing I've heard about in 2017. And man, you got people supporting you from all over the globe.
I appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me on the podcast.
All right, that's Jared Blank at Inmotional. Check him out on the gram, on his website. And hey, there's still time, right, Jared? If you want to sign up for this, let's go.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I know the race director, so contact me directly and I'd be happy to put you in touch.
All right. Well, I'm going to ride my bike alongside Jared. And by that, I mean maybe a car, maybe a drone. We'll see. But that's Jared Blank. 7 marathons, 7 days in 7 continents. Truly living his dream. Jared, much love, brother. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
How about that? I mean, this is going to be awesome. World Marathon Challenge. I mean, can you even imagine it? 7 marathons, 7 continents in 7 days. So this thing kicks off January 30th. I don't know about you, but I'm going to be glued for 7 straight days to everything Jared Blank. I mean, only 33 people ran this thing last year. It's going to be off the charts. So let's make sure we support them here with the Life Without Limits community as Jared is seeking just to do something epic. And God, I need so many powerful lines in there that I've been writing notes down, just listening back to it before I post it. But probably my favorite one is what he said to be human, is to find out what's possible, what moves you, and pursue it. That's just badass, man. So anyway, check it out. Jared Blank, inmotional.run. Utilize the hashtag run with Jared. And this one is going to be special. As always, man, this podcast The only limits that we have in life, the ones we set ourselves. Keep seeking.